We are quite fortunate in having Dr. Shakuntala Haraksingh Tilstead here to talk to us today about the potential of aquaculture to improve human health nutrition. Dr. Tilstead has been appointed as the Senior Nutrition Advisor at the World Fish Center. She was formerly with the Department of Human Nutrition, University of Copenhagen, Denmark, and she has broad area of research and expertise in food-based strategies for improving food and human nutrition security in low-income countries. She has carried out work in Bangladesh, Cambodia, West Bengal, and Nepal, together with government institutions, universities, and NGOs, focusing on the potential of nutrient-dense small fish in combating and preventing vitamin and mineral deficiencies, in particular vitamin A, iron, zinc, and calcium, especially in women and children. At the World Fish Center, she'll be developing and implementing the CGIAR Mega Program 4, Aquaculture for Improved Nutrition and Health. So please join me in welcoming Dr. Shakuntala Tilstead. Thank you.
Good afternoon to all of you. I'm quite happy to be given the opportunity to make this presentation on the potential of aquaculture to improve human nutrition and health. I've given this outline, and I will try to use my presentation to build up the case for aquaculture to play a crucial role in addressing food and nutrition security, in particular micronutrient deficiencies, dwell on why I consider this a missed opportunity for aquaculture. I will present data on small fish as a rich source of micronutrients and aquaculture production strategies to ensure supply and access of micronutrient-rich fish. I wish to give some ideas on how aquaculture can be implemented with a nutrition lens, and lastly, reinforce the role aquaculture can play to improve human nutrition and health in view of the recent hikes in food prices. The many benefits of aquaculture have been dealt with by a number of presenters at this conference. As my entry point, I will take food and nutrition security. The definition of food security gives ample room for aquaculture to play a role in improving human nutrition and health. My focus will be limited to nutritious foods to meet dietary needs. However, being very much aware that safe food is also a very important aspect. I also wish to draw your attention to the fact that food alone does not ensure food and nutrition security. Provision of health services and care are as essential as food. People who work with fisheries and fish production always begin by stating that fish is an important source of animal protein for human consumption. I can give you a whole course on why this focus on protein in human nutrition is totally misplaced. However, I hope I can get away by convincing you that protein is an essential macronutrient. However, it is not a limiting macronutrient in human consumption. Be reminded that rice contains 8 to 10% protein, beans and pulses around 20% protein, and a diet with rice, fish, other aquatic animals and vegetables, as you have, for example, in rural Cambodia, meets over 130% of the dietary needs of protein. There is also some focus on fat, and in particular, polyunsaturated fatty acids. The nutrition and health benefits of some high market value fish with high contents of polyunsaturated fats have been documented in Greenland and high-income countries. In my presentation, I would focus on the missed opportunity of addressing micronutrient deficiencies. Micronutrient deficiencies is also termed the hidden hunger. And if you look at the picture of these smiling Bangladeshi children, you will not recognize that they suffer from subclinical micronutrient deficiencies. Deficiencies of essential vitamins and minerals affect a large proportion of the world's population and have dire consequences for the immune system, cognitive development, work productivity, and hence national development. A group of distinguished economists met in Copenhagen in 2004 and 2008, the Copenhagen Consensus, and ranked the provision of micronutrients as the world's best investment for development out of 30 options. They followed up with economic assessments based on cost effectiveness and recommended supplementation and fortification as the strategies to be implemented. Two well-known examples are based on the provision of single micronutrients, vitamin A supplementation in children under 5 years of age, and universal iodine fortification of salt. It is notable that these Nobel Prize laureates made no mention of micronutrient-rich foods to provide micronutrients. However, we all know from time immemorial that foods supply nutrients, both macro and micronutrients. And within food-based strategies to meet micronutrient needs, the focus has been, and it still is, on fruits and leafy vegetables, as well as animal source food, meat, egg, and milk. Fish and other aquatic animals have been totally ignored. The foods that are used in food-based strategies are generally characterized based on their degree of bioavailability of micronutrients in the human body, as well as their market value. In the next three slides, I will illustrate the placement of small fish species in relation to other foods, using examples from Bangladesh, and as to why small fish species are a rich source of micronutrients. The first, vitamin A. The red bar are meat and eggs, the green bars are vegetables, and the blue bars are small fish species. If we look at the vitamin A-rich foods, chicken liver ranks as number one, and after comes four small fish species, with molar being very high. If we move to iron-rich foods, the small fish dakina ranks number one, thereafter chicken liver, and then three other small fish species in Bangladesh. And if we move to zinc, two small species ranked before ground beef, and then two other small species before we move on to liver and eggs. Thus, we can conclude that small fish species are a rich source of essential micronutrients. Importantly, in contrast to supplementation and fortification, small fish are a source of multiple micronutrients and not just single micronutrients. Let me share an interesting study from Bangladesh. Both in Africa and in Asia, there have been successful small-scale poultry production interventions for improving household income generation, with focus on the involvement of women. In Bangladesh, such programs have been very successful, and we have evaluated an intervention in Bangladesh with a nutrition lens. We found, as to be expected, chicken and egg production increased significantly in the intervention households compared to control households. However, intakes of chicken and egg among women and girls were similar in both groups. Interestingly, intake of small fish was significantly higher in the intervention households, and women reported that the foods which they preferred to buy with additional income from the sale of chickens and eggs were, in the order, fruits, small fish, leafy vegetables, beef, and milk. These findings highlight the role that aquaculture can play to ensure that micronutrient-rich small fish are made accessible and affordable for human consumption. There is much to build on to make use of this missed opportunity. We know from consumption studies that small fish is a common everyday food, And although the quantity eaten is small, it is shared by all household members. It is a well-liked food. It adds diversity to the diet, diets which are heavily dependent on one staple, for example, rice in Asia. And through its preparation method, it is a carrier of other essential nutrients from oil, vegetable, and spices. Consumption surveys from rural Bangladesh show that small fish make up a much larger proportion of the total fish consumption compared to silver carp, which is a preferred species in pond polyculture in Bangladesh. Note that this may change with time as small fish supplies diminish and market price increase. Fish, then, is a major contributor of all nutrients. All fish, both small and large, supply protein. However, only small fish, as they are eaten whole with head, bones, and viscera, supply micronutrients such as vitamin A, iron, zinc, and calcium. Therefore, these small fish have the potential to reduce micronutrient deficiencies. In the following slides, I will present some research data on this. Among common small fish in Bangladesh, mola is truly a bright star with respect to vitamin A content. Note that silver carp contains very little vitamin A. Most of the vitamin A in fish is present as dehydroretinol and not retinol as in other animal source foods. The bioefficacy, that is, the utilization in the human body of dehydroretinol, is yet to be established. All we have is studies from rats. It is also important in using mola as a vitamin A source that we know in which parts of the fish the micronutrient is found and ensure that these parts are not discarded in cleaning or as plate waste. To obtain vitamin A from mola, it is essential that the head is consumed. We have estimated what these data mean in terms of meeting vitamin A needs. If we estimate that there are over 4 million small ponds in Bangladesh, and using production results from polyculture studies carried out by Dr. Wahab and his colleagues from the Bangladesh Agricultural University, we have estimated that a minimal production of mola per pond can be 10 kgs per year. Then we can meet the needs of vitamin A of 6 million children. More importantly, we should note that vitamin A can be stored in the human body, so seasonal intake does not pose a problem. We have screened a number of common fish in Cambodia, and the small fish, Isomus, is a clear winner with respect to iron content. In fish, there are iron compounds which are not found in other foods, and therefore we need to conduct bioavailability studies to measure the absorption and utilization in the human body. We have estimated what Isomus means in terms of meeting iron needs of women and children in Cambodia. Rice and sour soup is a common everyday meal in Cambodia. If the sour soup is made with Isomus, and we are using the amounts of foods that people generally eat in one meal, then we can meet over 40% of the iron needs of women and children in a single meal. Coming from the world of human nutrition, this is a very great contribution to iron needs. I'm not sure how much this audience will appreciate what this means in meeting iron needs. No other food item can match this contribution. And fortunately, screening again these Cambodian varieties, fortunately, Isomus is also very rich in zinc. This is a bit difficult slide. Now I'm getting a bit technical in terms of human nutrition. I have mentioned bioavailability, that is the absorption and utilization of vitamins and minerals in the human body, is an important factor for meeting micronutrient needs and thus addressing micronutrient deficiencies. Bioavailability is difficult to determine, and in vitro methods are used to simulate absorption in the human body. What these bars show is that in the first set of bars, we can see that as the amount of molar we have used here, as the amount of fish increases, so does the iron content and so does iron consumption. Fish is normally eaten with rice, the second set of bars. If you look at the second set of bars, as rice amount increases, iron absorption falls. And this is due to the presence of inhibitors of iron absorption in rice, such as phytates. The last bar, the yellow bar, shows that the addition of fish to rice increases iron absorption. That is, fish has an enhancing effect on iron absorption from other food items in the meal. The case of small fish as an extremely rich source of calcium is conclusive. Calcium is an essential and limiting mineral for growth in children as well as in pregnancy and lactation. As small fish are eaten whole, the bones supply calcium. There is very little plate waste of bones from small fish compared to large fish, and thus large fish such as carps do not supply calcium. However, we had to go one step further. We had to show that the calcium from the bones of small fish is bioavailable. So what we did is we took the molar, the fish from Bangladesh, back to Denmark, and did a very sophisticated study using isotopic-labeled molar in test meals in Danish students, and conclusively proved that the fish bones are as rich a source as bioavailable calcium as milk. And as you all know, milk is considered worldwide to be the best calcium source. Dr. Wahab and his team have conducted trials in ponds and wetlands with large and small fish, focusing on molar, and they have also included prawn. They have documented that the inclusion of small fish in pond polyculture leads to an increase in total fish production, an increase in the nutritional quality of the production, no decrease in carp or prawn production, that small fish breed in ponds and partial harvesting must be practiced, and that frequent harvesting of small amounts of small fish favors home consumption. These encouraging results for polyculture of large and micronutrient-rich fish have been expanded to production systems in rice fields and wetlands in Bangladesh, as well as small seasonal ponds in the Sundarbans in West Bengal and the Terai in Nepal. On the basis of these results, I wish to give some suggestions as to how aquaculture can be implemented with a nutrition lens. Studies such on the intake of fish and other aquatic animals at species level and at intra-household level needs to be documented. Nutrient analyses of common fish species and other aquatic animals must be carried out, not only of freshwater species, but for coastal populations of common species from coastal areas. Nutrition awareness at all levels, from policymakers to all household members, of the nutritional value of small fish must be done. Sustainable, low-cost, large-scale strategies to improve conservation, management, production, availability, accessibility, and consumption of micronutrient-rich small species must be developed and disseminated. Cost-effective studies of micronutrient-rich fish in combating micronutrient deficiencies using the DALI method, as is used by the World Bank, must be carried out. I am sure that if this is done, the very strong and limited focus, which I've noticed, on fish market value, export, and profits will get a very new perspective. And I hope that the terms trash fish and weed fish would be eliminated from the fisheries vocabulary. The DALI method estimates the cost of human development and productivity, and what this means in terms of gross domestic product, surprisingly much more than fish exports. It is not sufficient just to conduct studies. engagement in integrated initiatives to improve human nutrition and health is necessary. For example, the upcoming CGIAR research program for agriculture for improved nutrition and health. Within this program, the World Fish Center will initiate an IFAD-funded project in Bangladesh, which includes three components: polyculture of large and small fish focusing on molar in ponds and wetlands, nutrition education to household members, and promotion of consumption of small fish, especially in women and children. The USAID has launched two massive initiatives, the Feed the Future and Global Health Initiative, and the EU food facility is being implemented in a number of low-income countries. There are also many new initiatives on biosecurity and climate change. On top of this, it is imperative that national policies and plans of actions concretely include aquaculture for improved nutrition and health. There must be clear responsibility for implementation at ministerial level. If these organizational setups are not put in place, then it will be very difficult to carry out scaling up activities. Lastly, I wish to reinforce this case in light of the much publicized food hikes in price hikes in foods observed from 2007. How do these hikes affect food consumption at the household level? As prices increase, a household strives hard to maintain rice intake, energy intake, and prevent hunger. Less money is available for spending on other foods, such as fish, vegetables, fruits, and meat. Therefore, diet diversity is reduced, and thereby micronutrient intakes are reduced. This leads to an increase in the prevalence of micronutrient deficiencies. Thus, aquaculture can play a crucial role in increasing micronutrient intakes and thereby improving human nutrition and health. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We do have a few minutes for questions. If people would like to ask any questions, please.
Al-Sayed from Egypt. I understand from your presentation that you are encouraging the rural societies in the countries mentioned to consume more of this small nutrient-rich fish. But how about the over-exploitation of this fish? I'm afraid that with time, there could be disbalance in the ecosystem in this region. So how do you look about that? Or is there anyone who's been looking?
Well, I talk about working in integrated projects. So therefore, I call on Dr. Wahab to answer this question.
Professor Said, in fact, true that it is decreasing and will be decreasing further as well. So Bangladesh has taken up the program of biodiversity conservation in the selected wetland habitats, as well as over the last 20 years, we have taught the villagers that use the rotenone, phostoxin, and poisons, kill all the small fish, then stock the desired fish. So we now suggesting don't use these chemicals at all, leave whatever there in the ponds and stock the large fish, and gradually harvest the smaller one. With this approach, as well as active stocking of mola and some small fishes, will restore the availability of this fish. That we believe. Thank you very much.
And increase the availability, I hope.
Thank you. Atada is my name. Please, I want us to distinguish between small adult fish and the juveniles of big fish.
Yes.
So that we don't get ourselves in the ecological confusion or something.
In Bangladesh, I know that the fish people have defined what they call small indigenous fish species. And these are fish species that grow up to a maximum of 15 centimeters. And when I talk about looking at micronutrient contents in large and big fish. For example, we've looked at the differences in vitamin and mineral contents in molar and in silver caps. We've also looked at silver caps at different stages of growth, also in juvenile silver caps, and we have found no vitamin A content.
I'm Dr. Kaushik from France. I'm extremely pleased to hear such an interesting work on what the importance of fish and micronutrients. I'm working in the fish nutrition as part of human nutrition, and this is a major issue that we have been also discussing, even with the salmonids and other things and carps produced and so on, especially, for instance, the iodine content, how to improve the iodine levels in freshwater fish. I mean, this is something which is important. And there are other initiatives in different countries. We try to calculate the micronutrient supply, especially the few micronutrients that you mentioned about. It's a very important issue that we've got to maintain, that this is going to be one major issue compared to other terrestrial animal production systems. Yes, of course, it's very important that you mentioned this.
Kevin Fitzsimmons from University of Arizona. I just needed a little clarification. The nutrient analysis of the whole fish, then you also mentioned later they were also carriers for oils and spices, and then later about cooking. So the analysis, was that actually done on whole freshly caught fish, or was it at one of the stages later on in the cooking or with spices or anything like that?
At all stages. We fresh, cleaned, then cooked, and also cleaned and the edible parts. We also had to take into consideration plate waste. But the values are presented, for example, for iron, zinc, yes, and for vitamin A. They are from cleaned, edible parts, non-cooked.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Hello, Yogi Carolsfeld. A similar question. I was wondering what effects different kinds of processing have on these micronutrients, for example, canning or cooking or frying.
We haven't done studies on canning. Frying, if you look at vitamin A and the effect of frying, with the use of oil, you would release the vitamin A from the structure, so you would get more, you'd get a higher bioavailability of vitamin A. With respect to iron and zinc, to the minerals, there doesn't seem to be an effect of processing or cooking.
I really enjoyed your presentation, especially the comment about there's no such a thing as trash fish.
Or
low-value fish, for that matter. This talk actually should have come after the talk yesterday about fish for feed, which I think would merge very nicely with our thoughts with regards to this. Who are we to judge which fish is trash or low-value in whose eyes? So I think this is very, very relevant and very important to remember that we're feeding people. There are many, many uses for fish, which we sometimes think should go into feed.
I'm Wilnat from Myanmar. I just want to add, I mean, like I mentioned again about what Kevin was asked. Those micronutrients are from the raw, clean fish, right? So, but usually those women, kids, consume cooked fish. And we have cooked in a variety of ways, like boiled or, you know, deep fry or stir fry and so on and so forth, and also maybe a dry form. So what would be the micronutrient level available to those human after you have cooked in a different variety, different forms? This is what I like to know. Thank you.
Well, we've done, what we know from studies, it's and from some of the work, some of the small studies that we have done, there's no effect on minerals, on iron or zinc. There's an effect on vitamin A. If you dry molar, for example, sun-dry molar, you lose a lot of the vitamin A content. If you deep-fry molar in oil, you increase absorption because vitamin A is a fat-soluble vitamin A. So it's different depending on the micronutrient you're working with. If you take calcium, there's no effect.
Okay, well, thank you very much for a fascinating talk and interesting approach.